I didn't realize until I just Googled a little information a while ago. This is cryptocurrency related, or at least partly. Is that
That's a
right?
tough. That's a tough stretch. You could say that that might be the first domino that transpired. The first domino was a bank called Silvergate, and Silvergate catered to cryptocurrencies. It was one of the only banks that did business with a lot of blockchain type companies, and they did a lot with the blockchain. I don't know. In particular, I just always knew them as a crypto bank. And Silvergate, I believe it was 3 weeks ago now, basically somewhat out of the blue, but it was kind of telegraphed by their stock price because their stock price had fallen precipitously since the FTX scandal broke and that exchange went under. If you recall the Sam Bankman-Fried issue and the FTX exchange that went bankrupt or basically went under a month or so ago or a couple months ago. So Silvergate, out of the blue, pretty much just said we're gonna close up shop. We don't have the ability to do business any longer. That wasn't a big market moving event. I think that happened maybe on a Tuesday. Maybe it was even a Monday. I don't recall. It's kind of all blurred together now. But that wasn't a big market moving event. However, shortly after that, and a lot of speculation is again that that was the first domino to fall, because shortly after that, a bank that now everybody's familiar with called Silicon Valley Bank also started having liquidity problems. Now, you have to understand that how I could potentially connect the dots. I think it'll be years before someone is really able to go in and forensically maybe connect this, but my suspicion is that Silicon Valley Bank, which carved out a niche among the technology companies of today, a lot of them startups that we have not yet heard of, and processed, a lot of their bank deposits and helped them with payrolls and so forth, located in Silicon Valley, the Palo Alto area of California. Shortly after, within days of the Silvergate Bank basically closing up shop, it became rumored very quickly throughout the markets that Silicon Valley Bank was having liquidity issues. People were struggling getting money out of that bank. It immediately manifested in their stock price. A lot of these institutions are publicly traded, falling considerably. And when that happens, if you think back to the great financial crisis, whether it was Bear Stearns or Lehman or any of these banks that basically went under, it first showed up in their stock prices. I mean, investors voted with their pocketbook first, and then the dominoes fell thereafter, and it became apparent that they had financial problems. So the Silicon Valley Bank stock was falling. I think this was on a Wednesday. It was just getting crushed, and it became known that the bank was trying to raise money. Now, you don't have to be a financial, connoisseur to know that when a bank has to raise money, that's problematic. They're supposed to hold money. They're not supposed to go out and raise money. And so very quickly, word spread that Silicon Valley had invested their reserve, the deposits that they had on hand, they had invested those in United States Treasuries. Now, United States Treasuries academically are known as risk-free assets. In fact, a 10-year treasury is known academically as a risk-free asset. So it's very important to understand this bank did not go out and make like risky loans or bet on cryptocurrency or any of this. They simply took deposits. My understanding is it was approximately 200 billion, which is what they had on hand, a bank. It was a sizable bank. And because their nature of business, this is also very important to understand. Unlike many local or regional banks here in central Kentucky that take deposits and loan those deposits out, those deposits maybe are people's savings, checking, it's everyday banking. A lot of the deposits at Silicon Valley were investor money into startups. So, Stu, let's say that you have a startup and you raised $5 million. Well, you put a business plan together to raise that $5 million, and you're going to spend that $5 million in a matter of a year, 18 months, 24, whatever it was, because you are hiring people, you might be investing in an office, you're building infrastructure, whatever. So that money that's being held on your behalf is not going to be lent out like a traditional bank. That bank knows, Silicon Valley Bank knows that Stu Inc. is going to need that money. So they're going to park it somewhere safe. Unfortunately, they made a bad bet. And the bet was that they parked it in short-term treasuries, 1, 2, and 3 year paper is my understanding, as we kind of learn more about this. But what they didn't understand, and a lot of banks I think are in this same boat, is how quickly the Federal Reserve would raise interest rates over the last 12 to 18 months. Now, why does that matter? Because if you think of interest rates and bond prices on a teeter-totter, when interest rates go up, bond prices go down. Now, as they set to mature, they will mature at their face value. They will come back to the level. But while they're held, if you buy a bond and interest rates go up, the value of that bond goes down. So as a bank, my understanding is they had $200 billion in deposits. They bought 1, 2, and 3 year treasuries. And at one point, they were down in those treasuries about $15 billion. Now that's about 7-8%. Not a tremendous amount, but they were in short-term paper, meaning that they weren't supposed to be down. It shouldn't have been down. And so for whatever reason, and this is where we don't know, and this is why I say that first domino, for whatever reason, people started wanting deposit, you know, wanting money out of Silicon Valley. There's some speculation that Peter Thiel kicked this whole thing off. He's a legendary VC out in Silicon Valley. There's speculation that, you know, somebody talked, you know, somebody within the bank shared with other people, hey, we're down on this asset. For whatever reason, people started getting their money out. Well, think of It's a Wonderful Life, in that scene where there's a bank run, right? And Jimmy Stewart says, your money's not here. It's in so-and-so's house. It's in so-and-so's house. Similar to that, their money was there. It was just down. It was underwater. So all of a sudden, the bank, seeing all of these, you know, people wanting their money, it's down. They're having to sell treasuries, which means they're having to go in and take losses. And as they're taking losses, they're going, this is problematic. We may need to raise more money. Well, at that point, the fire's out of control. People are taking their money out as fast as they can, and the bank doesn't have it. And they basically, regulators, state regulators, and the FDIC come in and they shut down the operations of the bank. Now, shortly thereafter, that happened on a Friday. And we're going into the weekend. This was 2 weeks ago. We're going into the weekend, and this is what's happened. And you're thinking, and the markets are selling off because we don't know what's transpiring. This is reminiscent of 08 and 09, the great financial crisis. So we come into the weekend, and there was about a 24-hour, 48-hour period there prior to Sunday night that I personally thought we were going to come into Monday and see national bank runs. Like, you would wake up, Stu, and your buddies and your friends and family would be texting you and going, your money, you need to get your money out of the bank. And I don't care who you are. We don't operate on cash in this country. We operate on credit, meaning even our debit. We operate on money that's electronically held in a bank. If all of a sudden, as a country, we woke up one day and said, we better get our money out of a bank, you talk about a financial collapse in our country, it would be catastrophic. Saturday, there was another bank over that weekend, a Signature Bank, primarily based in New York, was also taken over by the FDIC. That one kind of came out of left field. It didn't have anything to do with Silicon Valley Bank, but similar to them, my understanding is they had investments in short-term treasuries. They were seeing liquidations. They were down on those investments, and the FDIC had to step in and take over that bank. By Sunday night, it was very shaky as the global markets were about to open. And a lot of people, you know, were speculating, as average Americans are going about their day. I spent most of the day and the evening talking with other investors and financiers across the country. And we're going, okay, what is Monday going to look like? The Treasury, the FDIC, and the Fed came together and basically said, look, if you are invested in one of these banks, even if you are over the insured limit of $250,000, we will make sure that you have capital. It will be provided, meaning we will backstop these uninsured deposits. Now, what you have to understand is that automatically through a group of people on the internet into tizzy, oh, here we go again. We're bailing out the banks. We're bailing out the rich, you know, this, that, and the other. Well, there's two things you have to understand about this time, which makes it dramatically different than 08 and 09. The first thing you have to understand is they did not bail out the bank. Those two banks are now gone. Those stock prices have gone to zero. The bond hold, if you owned a stock or bond in those companies, you've been wiped out. People who work there lost their jobs, et cetera. Now, there's some news that came out that some executives sold stock prior to this event. Now, those were disclosed planned sales that they had already planned to do, but the optics of it look terrible. And my suspicion is some of that will be clawed back. But unlike in 08 and 09, where we rescued the banks and we saved them and depositors, in this instance, they let the banks go, which I think is a positive. The second thing that makes this very different than 08 and 09 is what the bank actually owns. Unlike in 08 and 09, where the bank owned mortgages that were highly speculative, highly levered, and failing because the economy was failing and people weren't paying those mortgages, therefore those mortgages were becoming worthless, these banks own United States treasuries, the safest asset class in the world. So with a little bit of time, they would mature and become of value. They wouldn't be down at all. The problem is a bank in this situation doesn't have time. When deposits are running out the door, there's no time to wait for a treasury to mature. Now what's happened since then, coming into that week, that was 2 weeks ago, markets rebounded. People breathed a sigh of relief. Two things transpired. The first thing that transpired is, okay, the Fed and Treasury is there. We feel good. Now you don't have to have a concern about your deposits. My question, however, has always been, and we're getting that answer at least thus far, is what they did with Silicon Valley and Signature, is that going to be true for other banks? So for example, if we start to see bank failures across the country, will people that have or businesses that have more than $250,000, will they be secure as well? And we never got that answer. And there's been speculation around there. Now, people assumed that that was going to be the case. That was the assumption. And so it kind of quelled a lot of fear, and the markets and everything kind of operated as usual. The second thing that it did is it sent a message loud and clear to our Federal Reserve. Hey, what you're doing, raising rates at this rapid pace, is causing a negative situation. And maybe you need to chill out a little bit, which is a camp that I've been in for a long time. And so those two events, the fact that, again, it calmed the fear and it sent a message loud and clear to the Fed, actually was a positive for the stock market. The stock market has been doing quite well since this. However, fast forward now a week later, we have other problems at other banks. There's a bank called First Republic. FRC is the ticker symbol. That stock is down, I think, 80 or 90%. And there's been a concerted effort by other banks to try and make deposits there to shore up that liquidity, but it doesn't seem to be working. But yesterday, the very same day that the Federal Reserve was set to announce their rate hike, which they did, as you know, they raised rates 25 basis points, and they did an okay job. That was telegraphed, that was already baked in, that was not a surprise. And I believe Jerome Powell discussed the banking issues and how they could be impacting the economy. And he was very forthright, and it was a positive. It was a positive for the market. It was a positive for the bond market. The problem was, at the very same time the Federal Reserve was announcing their rate hike and standing in front of a podium taking questions, Janet Yellen of the Treasury Secretary was testifying in front of the Senate. And when asked specifically about FDIC insurance, she said, we are not at this point considering increasing the insurance limits on FDIC. And immediately, bank stocks across the country started to sell off, and it ended up taking the market down considerably. Mm-hmm. Many banks are trading at terrible levels here, and there is now a renewed fear that many banks are in the same situation as Silicon Valley, as Signature Bank, and First Republic, and that we're going to see a continued spread of this issue.
Wow. So Kentucky banks and the risk for Kentucky banks. Is there a risk in Kentucky banks?
So I think there's a risk for every bank that has a lot of deposits over uninsured amounts and are experiencing losses. So let me say that again. If you are a bank and you have a lot of deposits that are above your uninsured amount of $250,000 and you have investments that are down, I don't care where you are, that's a problem. My understanding, as I have just heard and discussed with people, is that is not a lot of our banks. A lot of our banks in Kentucky are traditional, you know, small business loan banks with, you know, solid loan portfolios, not a lot of deposits that are above the insured limit. And so as depositors, those of us who have money in local banks, number one, if you're below the insured limit, you have nothing to worry about because the FDIC is there to back that insured limit. If, however, you have an above amount of the insured limit at a bank, if you have more than $250,000, which we can talk about why one would do that, mm-hmm. I really think if you're not discussing with your management team or your business team or your board or whomever about diversifying those deposits, that's probably something you should already have done. But it does beg the question, Stu, why would anyone have more than $250,000 in one bank? Well, if you're a business and you have payroll or an operational budget or a fund or something that you're using for your business, often, if you're a decent sized business, it's more than $250,000. So for the first time in my career, I have been having conversations with small business and other organizations about cash management strategies, which we've never talked about. Cash management, I mean, you haven't had to talk about that since the Great Depression. Why would we talk about that? Because if you have a limit or if you have an amount above the FDIC insured and the bank starts to have some problems, you could be in trouble. There could be liability there. So, you know, I don't know. My understanding from what I have heard is that many in the Central Kentucky regional and local banks have not, do not experience significant above insured deposit amounts and are not experiencing losses on their portfolio. But that's just in discussion that I've heard. But more importantly, from the consumer, I think most consumers are perfectly fine.
Right. Okay. And, you know, there's been a, obviously when all this has been happening, there's been the word out there that to kind of what calm fears that you're not going to lose your money. You're not going to lose all your money out of the bank. I mean, is that fair to say that too, that we could feel that security?
If, again, the United States dollar acts on the full faith and credit of the United States. The United States dollar is not backed up by gold. We are not on the gold standard. We are a fiat currency that is backed up by the full faith and credit of the United States. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're in an environment right now where many people don't put a lot of stake into that, that the full faith and credit of the United States is under attack. I will say, however, that when you compare currencies to other currencies around the world, which is the only thing you can do, our currency remains the strongest, best currency in the entire world without question. So to all of a sudden extrapolate that because we have an issue that has transpired from a very rapid rate hike and our treasuries are down and now we have fear about our banks, to extrapolate that out, that the United States dollar and we are going to lose our deposits at the bank, that is a very, very far-fetched idea and a very big stretch and one that I certainly cannot get behind. Mm-hmm. I think as most depositors, if you are invested in assets such as your investment account, your retirement account, your savings account, your checking account, et cetera, in dollar denominated terms, you're perfectly fine. What needs to happen, however, Stu, and I'm shocked that this hasn't happened yet, is that the Treasury and the FDIC need to come out and state that they are going to backstop uninsured deposits. Now, what people have to understand is that does not mean the Treasury is opening a checkbook. All that means is that they are securing deposits over $250,000 so that people will not run for safety. Because if they run for safety, again, Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life, everyone's taking their money out, the bank will collapse. Even if it's a perfectly sound bank, if everyone gets fearful and takes all of their money out, the bank will go down. So ultimately, if the Fed, Treasury, FDIC came out to provide that confidence across the country, that would buy the time that the banks need in that are in this situation to have treasuries mature and ultimately not have any risk whatsoever. If they do not do that, my fear is money will continue to move out of these smaller banks as fear builds upon itself, and it will create a new problem within itself, which is just a liquidity banking problem across the board. And that would be problematic. And I really hope it doesn't come to that. I'm shocked that Janet said what she said yesterday, and I'm concerned that they have not come out to calm the fears of the banking sector.
Okay, Quint, just maybe one more question. I'll call it the threat of recession, or the, you know, the recession's coming. Does that play into this at all? I mean, number one, is the recession going to happen?
Yeah, there's a lot of arguments about that, Stu, and there's a lot of sound indicators that are suggesting a recession is coming. One of the most historic and profound is, and I won't get too in the weeds with this, but it's called the inverse yield curve. So for example, the federal funds rate, or the very short end interest, is now almost 5%. So you can buy a 1-year treasury. You can put your money in a 1-year treasury and get almost 5%. The 30 year is about 3%. Now, if you think about locking your money up, you should get more on your money for a longer time period than shorter. It just makes sense that it would be short, and then on the long end, you would have higher rate. Here's why that creates a problem. If we continue like that, where the short end of the yield curve is higher than the long end, banks don't make money. If they take deposits in and then they loan deposits out for a long period of time. If a bank loses effectively money on every loan, they're not going to loan. They're going to stop loaning. And historically, when we have had this happen, an inverted yield curve, bank credit has tightened considerably and businesses have stopped spending money, and we enter a recession. That indicator is there now. It's been there for a while. It's concerning. That said, we've never had a recession in our country so wildly predicted as we would have now, meaning everyone is predicting and expecting a recession. And usually it's a qualitative kind of anecdotal thought, but usually when so many people are predicting something, it doesn't happen. Now, I can't tell you what the next 12 or 18 months will transpire. What I can tell you is this: many sectors of our economy are very strong. They're very robust. Others are not. So I feel kind of like we're seeing a shift in our economy where certain sectors are going to do fine and are going to do very well, especially as we come out of COVID. People are traveling. People are doing things. People are spending money that have money, and that's perfectly fine. There are other sectors of our economy that are going to slow down considerably. Anything that has to do with high debt, so that includes mortgages, that includes housing, that includes construction, that includes anything that has to do with high interest rates, I could see those areas struggling for some time. So I don't think it's going to be a blanket easy answer. I think there's going to be a pockets of strong areas of the economy, of the market, and there's going to be pockets that are weak. But ultimately, you know, even in the Great Depression, Stu, we had, you know, 20% unemployment. Mind blowing. Mm-hmm. But that meant 80% of people were working. We still have a healthy job market. We still have employment that's very low. So I think as consumers who are watching this that might be concerned about what's coming, in any environment, there are classic things that they should be doing, which is what? Being fiscally responsible, not spending more than they have, paying off debt, trying to be responsible with their cash flow and their money, not buying things that they can't afford, all of the basic things. And in any environment, that will serve someone very, very well. As investors, retirees, they're finally able to get good interest rate on CDs. They're able to get good interest rate on treasuries. We haven't seen that in over a decade. So retirees who are having cash or parking, you know, fixed income, they're getting good returns. And candidly, I'm talking my book a little bit, but if you know me, I'm not always Mr. Optimistic. I'm actually fairly optimistic of the markets. I'm fairly optimistic of the markets because sections of the market have already experienced such a significant decline and they're of value. They're finally attractive in a value standpoint that they haven't been in a long time. And I think they'll do very well. And not to mention, many of those companies out there have huge amounts of cash. They don't have a lot of debt. They have huge amounts of cash and they can weather any recessionary storm that comes their way.